माय स्क्रीन
आफ्टरनून एस जे
आई
ना
जस्ट
खुद
थिंक दैट आई हैव मास्क ऑन कैन आई पुट इट असाइड सो दैट आई एम ऑडिबल
ओके थैंक यू वेरी मच
एंड वी आर शॉर्ट सोशल डिस्टेंस
ओके apologies for starting late. We took a lot of time with the away from you with the Department of Correctional Services. I know we're supposed to have started at 2. Please accept our apologies for the late start.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Apologies.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Chairperson, with your leave, should I introduce the team or should we just sit? I'm here with the whole team of EBSCO, the head of the CFO is here, and our two DDGs, the head of the Judicial Education Institutes, the DDG Corporate Services, DDG Court Administration. The spokesperson and the court administration chief director is here, the head of strategy, the head of HR, the head of the CAE, the chief audit executive, and the secretary, and the head of risk is here. In the
problem that we don't see them. It will be better as you introduce them that we can see their faces.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I'll start each one of them. Some of you will see. The CMO can introduce
good
himself.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chairperson.
Remove your mask.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I'm Kasi Kutzer, CFO in the OCJ.
Thank you very much.
Honorable Chair, Narebi Spokshitter, DDG Care, Court Administration Services.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Nakande Mukhale. I'm the DDG Corporate Services.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair. My name is Komolewo Mushewu. I'm the head of the Judicial Education Institute. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chairperson. My name is Itumele Malao, the Chief Director responsible for Strategy, Monitoring and Evaluation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairperson and Honorable Members. Good afternoon, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Ranok Mabunda. I'm the Chief Police Officer.
Thank you.
Why is it so? The other one can come.
Honorable Members and Chair, it's Nati Mube, Administration Services Chief Director and Spokesperson for the Judiciary.
Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon, members and chairperson. My name is Ebisami Meshoji, the acting head of HRMNB.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, chairperson and the members. My name is Mutimola Motenes, the head of risk management. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. May we proceed? Otherwise, with the Secretariat, Yvonne, as well as Ms. Shosi, who are the Secretariat. Thank you very much. May we proceed, Chairperson? This is the presentation of the Office of the Chief Justice on the OCJ Annual Performance Plan for the financial year 2021-2022 financial year. The necessary governance in terms of presentation to the minister as well as consultations and submission to parliament has happened. May I request, Chairperson, that before the head of strategy and planning presents, that we be allowed to also dispense with the rest of the other information which are really introductory, then we can go to the gist of the presentation on the APP, unless the chairperson would like everything else to be read out. And with your permission, may we allow the head of strategy to present, and the team is here, we will be taking questions, all of us are related to. Thank you.
Proceed.
Thank you, SG. Good afternoon, Chairperson, and good afternoon to all members of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you for inviting us to share with the committee the annual performance plan for the Office of the Chief Justice for the 2021-22 financial year. Chairperson, our presentation is divided into three parts. The first part is the overview, and which basically focuses on the purpose of the presentation, the introduction, and the consultative process undertaken. And part B will focus on the situation analysis. And we've got part C, which basically focuses on the program performance, and also includes the financial information, the risk per outcome, and that will be the end of the presentation. Chair, in terms of the purpose, is mainly to share with the Portfolio Committee the Office of the Chief Justice Annual Performance Plan for the 2021-22 financial year. And in terms of introduction, Chair, the APP is the second APP towards implementing the outcomes of the OCJ and realizing the impact as articulated in our strategic plan. The APP was developed in line with the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation revised framework for strategic plan and annual performance plan. It was also developed in line with the National Development Plan, the medium-term strategic framework, and we also took into consideration, Chairperson, the priorities of the judiciary. In terms of the consultative process, the APP was widely consulted with the following stakeholders: the judiciary, the executive authority, the Auditor General of South Africa, the Audit and Risk Committee, the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, National Treasury, and the Executive Committee of the OCJ, as well as the Ops Committee, Operations Committee of the OCJ. The next slide, Chairperson, takes us to part B of our presentation. I'm not going to spend too much time on that one, but in essence, Chairperson, every department is required, you know, when they develop their plan, to scan the environment in which they operate in. And as the OCJ, we also identified certain factors that we feel or that has a potential basically to affect the successful implementation of our plans. And we have categorized that into both, you know, internal and external factors. And in terms of external factors, those factors include, amongst others, the impact of current status of the economy, the social factors on the influence on the justice system, technology and its role in improving access to justice, the legal factors impacting on the judicial system and the administration of superior courts, and the impact of COVID-19. And in terms of internal factors, mainly on the factors that were considered was the capacity within the OCJ, and factors relating to curbing opportunities for fraud and corruption, the health and wellness program, the ICT as a strategic partner enabler to business, the financial resources at our disposal, and the business continuity management. And lastly, the status of institutions regarding the compliance with BBBE Act, as well as the status of the institution regarding women, youth, and people with disabilities. Chairperson, I'm now moving to part C of our presentation, which basically focuses on the program performance. Chairperson, the OCJ carries out its mandate through three programs, as outlined in our budget program structure. The first program is administration, which is program one, and program two is superior court services, and program three is judicial education and support. And in terms of program one, which is administration, Chairperson, this program contributes towards the outcome on effective and efficient administrative support. And to realize this outcome, we have a number of outputs. The first output is clean audit outcome for the OCJ, and the output indicator relating to that outcome is audit outcome for the Office of the Chief Justice. And over the MTEF, our plan is as follows. In the first year of the MTEF, our plan is clean audit outcome for the 2020-21 financial year. In the second year of the MTEF is clean audit outcome for the 2021-22 financial year. And in the third year of the MTEF, our target is clean audit outcome for the 2022-23 financial year. The next output is tenders awarded to suppliers with level 4 and above triple B status. And the output indicator to support that output is percentage of tenders in the department's procurement plan awarded to suppliers with level 4 and above triple B status. And over the MTEF, our plan is to ensure that 80% of tenders in the department are awarded to suppliers with level 4 and above triple B status. The next output in support of the outcome is financial disclosure submitted, and the output indicator is percentage of designated employees, which basically is the SMS members and other categories who submitted financial disclosures within the time frame. And over the MTEF, our target for each year will be 100%. The next output is funded vacant posts reduced, and the output indicator is percentage of funded or percentage of vacant posts on funded establishment. And over the MTEF, the plan for each year will be 10% or lower. And the next output is empowered youth, and the output indicator is percentage of staff in the department comprised of youth, and our target for each year of the over the MTEF will be 30%. The next output in support of this outcome is women represented at SMS levels, and an output indicator is percentage of women representation in senior management services. And the target in the first year of our MTEF is 50%, and in the second year is 50%, as well as in the third year of the MTEF. And the output, the next output is people with disabilities representation. And the output indicator is percentage of people with disability representation in the department, and the target over the MTEF is 2%. The other output in support of this outcome is court online system implemented at service centers, and the output indicator is court online system implemented at service centers. And in the first year of the MTEF, which is 2021-22, our plan is to roll out court online system in 2 service centers, and in the second year of the MTEF to roll out court online system in 5 service centers, and in the third year of our MTEF, which is the 2023-24 financial year, we intend to roll it out to 5 service centers as well. And the final output under this program is employee health and wellness programs implemented, and the output indicator for this output is number of employee health and wellness programs implemented. And each year of the MTEF, our plan is to implement it. You know, our target is 9 for each financial year over the MTEF. Chairperson, the next slide, which is slide 13, with your permission, I think allow me to skip it, because it's just basically the breakdown of the annual targets, you know, into quarterly targets. So I've already, you know, outlined the annual targets to the committee, including slide 14 as well. It's just a breakdown of, you know, the annual target into quarterly deliverables. And moving now to slide 15, Chairperson. This is a slide that focuses on COVID-related indicators. Chair, all departments are expected to demonstrate their commitment in assisting government in minimizing the impact of COVID-19. And to give effect to this, Chairperson, you will note that we have separated, we have a separate section with separate indicators outlining the OCJ's commitment to dealing with COVID-19-related matters. So this is a separate section from the normal performance indicators. So we have number of COVID-related indicators that we have identified as an institution. The first one is number of COVID-19 OCJ, and the annual target for that one is 4, and our plan is to conduct 1 inspection every quarter. And the next
target, the next indicator is number of COVID-19 educational programs implemented within the OCJ. The annual target is 4, and over the quarters, for each quarter, we'll do one. We'll implement one educational program. And the next output is number of COVID-19 related trainings conducted for safety officers. The annual target is 4, and every quarter, we'll ensure that one training is conducted over the financial year. And the next indicator is number of COVID-19 compliance reports produced, and the annual target is 4, and every quarter we'll ensure that one compliance report is produced. And the last one under this category is number of COVID-19 pandemic risk mitigation reports produced, and the annual target is 4, and every quarter we'll ensure that one risk mitigation report is produced. Moving now, Chairperson, to our core business, which is Program 2 Superior Court Services. The outcome that this program contributes towards is improved court efficiency and the outputs. This also has number of outputs, and the first output is default judgments finalized within 14 days. And the output indicator for this output is percentage of default judgments finalized by registrars within 14 days of receipt. And the target for the 2021-22 is 72%, and 22-23 is 74%, and 23-24 is 76%. The next output in support of this outcome is bills of costs taxed within 60 days, and the output indicator is percentage of taxations of legal bills of costs finalized within 60 days from date of set down. And in the first year of our MTF, our plan is to achieve 75%, and in the second year, 80%, and in the third year, 85%. Next output is warrants of release delivered within 1 day, and the output indicator is percentage of warrants of release delivered within 1 day of the release issued. And the target is 100% for the 2021-22 financial year, and 100% for the 2022-23 financial year, as well for the 2023-24 financial year. The next output is monitoring reports on law reporting projects, and the output indicator is number of monitoring reports on law reporting projects produced, and our plan is to produce 4 reports in the 2021-22 as well as in the 2022-23 as well as as well as in the 2023-24 financial year. The next output in support of this outcome is judicial case flow management performance reports, and the output indicator is number of judicial case flow management performance reports produced, and our plan and commitment is to produce 4 reports in the 2021-22 financial year, and in the second year of the MTF, again 4 reports, and in the third year of the MTF, again 4. The other output is reports on enhancement of court order integrity, and the output indicator is number of reports on enhancement court order integrity produced. And every year, for each year of the MTF, our intention is to produce 4 reports. The next slide, which is slide 19, Chairperson, I'm also going to skip because it's just a breakdown of the annual target into quarterly deliverables. And I'm going to now move to program 3, which is judicial education and support. And this program, the outcome for this program is enhanced judicial performance, and is supported by a number of outputs as well. And the first output is judicial education courses conducted, and the output indicator is number of judicial education courses conducted. And in the 2021-22 financial year, our plan is to conduct 105 judicial education courses, and then 110 in the 2022-23 financial year, and 115 in the 2023-24 financial year. And the next output is monographs on judicial education produced, and the output indicator for this output is number of research monographs on judicial education produced per year. And our plan over the MTF is to produce 2 reports each year of the MTF. And the third output is monitoring reports on litigation. And the output indicator for this output is number of monitoring reports on litigation produced. And our plan is to produce 4 reports each financial year over the MTF. And the last output for this program is reports on judicial appointments and complaints produced. And the output indicator is number of reports on judicial appointments and judicial complaints produced. And in the first year of the MTF, we'll produce three reports and three reports in the second year, as well as in the third year. And again, Chairperson, the next slide, which is slide 22, is just a breakdown of the annual target into quarterly deliverables, which I'm going to skip as well. And Chairperson, allow me to pause here and hand over now to the Chief Financial Officer, who will take the committee through the financial information. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm going to start with a slide that deals with the budget cuts that we've experienced for the MTF period. You will note the slide only reflects the approved budget for 2021-22 and 2022-23 with the correlating cuts for the financial years. The reason why there's no budget cut for the outer year is when Treasury effected the cuts, the outer year 2023-24 was not yet approved, so we couldn't determine any cut on that financial year. So if we look at the budget cuts, it's the slide depicts the cuts per program as well as per economic classification. You would note that on the right-hand side of the slide, the figures in red represent the cuts for the 2 years. On program one, the budget cut was 20.4 million for year one, and then 27.2 million for year two. Program two was cut by 87.4 million in year one and 124.6 million in year two. Program 3 was cut by 16.1 million year 1 and 20.6 million in year 2. So on the voted fund, the overall cut for 2021-22 is 124 million, while for 2022-23, the cut is 172.5 million. Then on the judges' salaries, the direct charge, they've cut 150 million for the current financial year and then 196 million for the next financial year, bringing the total cut to 274 million for the current year and 368 million for the next financial year. If we look at the economic classification slide, the major portion of the cut was on compensation of employees. The total cut there was 254 million. In the current year and 343 million for the next financial year. The cut on the compensation portion of voters' funds, that is where the salaries of officials are being paid from, is 109.7 million and then 153.9 million for the next financial year. The direct charges, the judges' salaries portion was cut by 144 million and 189 million in the next year. The budget cut on goods and services, Honorable Chair, needs to be put in perspective. In the previous financial year, the OCJ's budget was already cut by 30 million on goods and services. Now, over and above the budget cut that we had to effect in the adjustment budget last year, they further cut 8.2 million on goods and services and 10.4 million for the next financial year. Then transfers and subsidies, that is where we are paying the judges' gratuities from, was cut by 5.4 million and 7.1 million respectively. Then on the purchase of capital assets, we experienced a cut of almost 6 million, 5.999 million in the current year, and then 8 million in the next financial year. The next slide, Honorable Chair, then deals with the impact of the reduction of the voted funds. Firstly, the reduction of the baseline negatively impacts the capacity to resource our courts in relation to HR equipment and the aging ICT infrastructure that needs to be replaced. This reduction will also impact on judicial functions such as case processing and adjudications. It will negatively impact court modernization, and then with the resultant negative impact on access to justice if we have to reduce the number of circuit courts. Then one of the effects of this budget cut is that when the Mpumalanga Division of the High Court was established, we received an additional budget from National Treasury for the staff complement of this division. Because it was a new division, we had to create posts to staff the division. Now, this happened in 2019, but with these budget cuts that we've now experienced, it means that the additional money that we received to fund this division has now been nullified as a result of this cut. Then, in general, there was a 14.9% cut on the compensation of employees. It will triple the OCJ in terms of our core mandate, which is to support the judiciary and the superior courts. The OCJ will not be able to fill critical posts, which are currently vacant or will become vacant during this MTES period. Now, the net effect on in terms of our posts is that the OCJ will then have to reduce the number of our posts on the establishment, 71 posts in 2021-22. Then this will grow to 74 posts in 2022-23, and then to 102 posts in 2023-24. The budget cuts on goods and services and capital budget impacts on, again, court modernization, the training program of judicial officers, providing sufficient witness administration, and providing sufficient translation and transcription services in the superior courts. Then if we look at the effect of the budget cut on direct charges, that is where we pay the salaries of judges from, this has been negatively affected by the budget cuts as demonstrated in the slide. If these cuts are not addressed as a matter of urgency by National Treasury, this will have a negative impact on the rendering of the judicial function. Then the next slide, Honorable Chair, just depicts the overall budget for the MTES period after these budget cuts were now effected. The administration program will have 229 million in year one, 233 million in year two, and 239 million in year three. Then the Superior Court Services program will have 919 million in year one, 931 million in year two, and 936 million in year three. Judicial Education and Support will have 63 million in year one, 60 million in year two, and 57 million in year three. Then the voted funds are depicted as 1.2 billion in year one, 1.225 in year two, and 1.232 in year three. Judges' salaries, direct charges, 1.118 billion, 1.122 billion, and 1.124 billion in the last financial year, within the total budget of the OCJ as 2.33 billion in year one, 2.348 in year two, and 2.357 in year three. The last slide on finance depicts the budget per economic classification. The compensation of employees in total, the total reflects the budget for voted as well as direct charges. I'm just going to do them separately. The voted budget for compensation of employees, you will see remain quite constant as there is no provision for any salary increases over the MTES period. Then the budget is 750 million throughout the 3 years. The direct charges, you will also see it remains fairly constant as it's also foreseen then by National Treasury that there won't be any salary increases for public office bearers in the MTEF period. Then goods and services, Honorable Chair, 351 million, 361 million, and 365 million. And you will see that there is relatively no growth in goods and services. So it in effect then means that we will not even be able to sustain the services that we currently have if we take into consideration issues like inflation, etc., where you pay more for services, more for fuel, more for electricity, but your goods and services budget remains constant. Then transfers and subsidies, as I've indicated, mostly this is for the payment of judges' gratuities. You will see 129 million, 134 million, and 134 million for the respective years. The small amounts of 1.4 million for the voted fund is only a provision that we are making for as and when officials either retire or resign and we have to pay out the leave gratuities of the accrued leave that they have to pay out. Then on the purchase of capital assets, our budget is also very constant, 108 million, 112 million, and 115 million. So it's also evident that there is no room for capital investment that we urgently need for our port modernization projects moving forward. So that concludes my financial presentation, Honorable Chair, and I'm handing over back to Mr. Malau to deal with the last part of the presentation.
Sorry, before you proceed, CFO, these two direct charges on judges' salary, the second one of 129 million, 134 and 134, can you repeat that?
All right. Honorable Chair, can I just take you back to the previous slide first?
Yes.
Sorry, not the previous slide, on top of the current, on that slide. Let me explain. The first direct charges, although in brackets is listed as judges' salaries, are the actual salaries of judges and acting judges, which we pay in terms of the notches for judges. The second direct charges under transfers and subsidies is where we have to pay the gratuities that judges are entitled to after 15 years of active service and then every 5 years thereafter. They are entitled to a gratuity. Now that is where the expenditure must be defrayed from. So salaries is done under compensation of employees and then gratuities are paid from transfers and subsidies. Okay. But both of those elements comes from direct charges.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. The next slide, Chairperson, which is the final slide, focuses on the risk, the outcome. As already indicated earlier, Chairperson, we have three outcomes. The first one, which is effective and efficient administrative support. The second one is improved cost efficiencies. And the third one is enhanced judicial performance. In terms of the first outcome, which is effective and efficient administrative support, the risk that has been identified by the OCJ are as follows. The first one is possible exposure to fraud and corruption. And to mitigate this, our plan is to ensure continuous awareness on policies. We also plan to strengthen internal controls relating to fraudulent court orders and will continue to monitor the implementation of fraud prevention and anti-corruption strategy. The next risk aligned to this outcome is delays to implement the court online system due to external dependencies. And our plan to mitigate this risk is to ensure reinforcement of stakeholders in relation to ensure commitment pertaining to project resources. And the last risk in relation to this outcome is inadequate resources to capacitate the OCJ in order to operate in the new normal. And how do we intend mitigating this? We are going to reprioritize the available resources to implement the new way of doing business and will also ensure skill capacitation to operate in the new normal. And the last one, the last risk in relation to this outcome is inaccurate performance reports produced. And with mitigation for this, we plan to conduct assessment and analysis of the performance of the OCJ on quarterly and on monthly and quarterly basis and produce monitoring reports. The next outcome is improved cost efficiency and the risk associated with this outcome is inadequate administrative support to ensure court efficiency.
And to mitigate, what is the risk mitigation? Is to prioritize the appointment of registrars and to ensure continuous training of the registrars. The last outcome, which is enhanced judicial performance, the risk associated with this outcome is inadequate resources to conduct judicial education courses and provide support. And how do we intend mitigating this? We will implement virtual and e-learning modules for judicial education. Chairperson, this brings us to the end of our presentation, and I would like to thank the committee for affording us the opportunity to share with the committee our plans. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Over to you, Esther.
Thank you, Chairperson. The team will take the questions from the honorable members, and we'll take it from there.
Thank you very much. Let me note hands from honorable members. I have Honorable Horn, Honorable Swart, and that Honorable Bredenbach, Honorable Werner Horn, Honorable Velmani Votrechens. So it's Honorable Horn, Honorable Swart.
Me too, sir.
Honorable Velma Nivot Rechens, Honorable Glenis Bredenbach, Honorable Numa Temba Masekwajele, in that order. Honorable Horn, are you back now?
Hello, can you hear me, Chair?
Yes, yes, now we're
okay.
Back.
Thank you. I've restarted my computer. I don't know what's going on today. And thank you to the OCJ for the presentation. Chair, a number of issues. We've taken note about the high-level report on the court modernization and the impact of the budget cuts on the ability of the OCJ to deliver this. But I think if we could be appraised in practical terms, we've had the pilot projects in Gauteng around online filing of documents, etc., and we've had the COVID-19 experience around online courts now. So what in practical terms does the OCJ foresee will they be able to develop and implement in this financial year or at least the medium term in respect of these matters, given the budget that is available? And then, Chair, another matter I wanted to raise was the issue of the land court bill that is now with this portfolio committee and whether the OCJ has already started preparing. We take note of the fact that the appointments amongst the administrative staff in Mpumalanga has now seemingly led to forced vacancies in other courts. So what will the impact be if the land court is established, let's say, even in this financial year? I got the sense from the minister's statements around the time of the publishment of the bill and the media reports around it that it is deemed an urgent bill. So if we could be afforded further information as to whether the OCJ has already started looking into this matter, it would be appreciated. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Horn. Who was next?
Swart, Chair.
Honorable Swart.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation.
Honorable Swart.
I think we need to see the presentation against the background of our previous interactions and, of course, the interaction with the...
Honorable Swart.
Turn off the video. It might be clearer.
Yes.
Can you hear me clearly?
Yes.
Is that better?
Better, yes.
I was just saying that we welcome the presentation and the that's been done by the Office of the Chief Justice and our previous interactions with the office, as well as our interaction with the Chief Justice and the judiciary itself that took place. I would just like, I think, to comment on the concerns that it's unavoidable, that budget cuts are unavoidable, but I think we need as a committee to fully appreciate what the OCJ, what the CFO is telling us about the implications of these budget cuts, particularly when we are asking questions about increased virtual trials that need to take place, increasing ICT infrastructure and equipment, and the impact on the human resources. I think they've made it very clear about the impact that this will have, which then results in a problem when it comes to access to justice and the reduction in the number of circuit courts. I would ask the Office of the Chief Justice just to unpack the practical implications of the reduction of funding to the Mpumalanga High Court. I think we need to just have a deeper understanding. Is it operating given that the funding was cut? And then when there was an indication about the posts, 71 posts for this year, 70, is that, and next year, is it an additional 74 posts, and the following year an additional 102 posts, or is it accumulative? I presume those are additional posts that then will not be filled. I would also ask that in view of the fact that the Judicial Services Commission has recently held interviews for a number of posts, are funded vacancy posts of judges, but is there any budgetary implication when it comes to the appointment? There could be additional judges, but my understanding was it was mainly vacancies that are being filled. Then I would, this follows is the rules, the rules board, that rule making court should be a function with the judiciary. However, that is not yet the case. So we are looking at progress with e-rules in terms of the uniform rules of court to make provision for online court processes. What progress has been made from that? Thank you, Chair.
Yes. No, we could not hear your last question. If you can.
Okay, very briefly, progress with the rules of court to allow for online courts. E-rules, and that would be from the Uniform Rules of Court, which is obviously the Rules Board. Thank you, Chair. In view of the problem with connection, I won't ask more questions at this stage. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Swart. Honorable Nieuwbord, Strachens.
Thank you very much to the Office of the Chief Justice for your presentation, and greetings to all of you. On slide 12, it shows the court online system 2255. So has the Office of the Chief Justice already decided where they are going to allocate the courts in terms of the numbers on this slide? And I would like to ask that you consider rural areas, because I visited a court in a rural area, Riebeek West. They did not have online virtual court access. Maybe that's still coming. But when you implement the online system, if you could consider the rural areas, because that would save the people long distance travel, or the need to travel long distances. then during lockdown there was a lot of backlog created, and until the lockdown was reduced to the level one, has there been reciprocal reduction of the backlog that was created? In terms of the bill that is coming, the Office of the Chief Justice will have to have resources to cover that bill. And I would like to ask, is the OCJ ready for that, also considering the budget cuts? And then I would like to know, how has the COVID pandemic affected the Office of Chief Justice in terms of the number of staff who are infected, and how many courts were closed during particular times, you know, the decontamination of courts, etc. I have a concern that when the Chief Justice met with the committee, one of my questions was in relation to the sign language interpreters in the courts. And the Chief Justice himself, in his response, is that he was the worry of the quality of the interpreters, sign language interpreters in the courts. So long term, what will the office do to improve the quality of sign language interpreting services provided in the courts for deaf people? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Newbold Jeffens, Honorable Glenis Breitenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm covered with regards to questions, but I must just express a deep concern at the effect that these budget cuts are going to have on this office and on the administration of justice and on access to justice. I don't know how we're going to run a 21st century justice system on the funds that are available. We're going to have to sit together, become more innovative, and find ways of, as the minister put it, sharing the head of the locust. I foresee great problems and great difficulties. But as far as question goes, I'm covered. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Breitenbach. Honorable Maseko Chole.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also thank the Office of the Chief Justice for the presentation. I only have few clarities or questions. The first one, Chairperson, is that I think it's more or less the one that Honorable Breitenbach has just asked about the constraints of the budget. I just want to find out from the department as to, earlier in the morning we were talking about modernization project and the ICT flagship project. We want to know how is this going to be affected with this, with these budget cuts, the constraints that they have already indicated. Because, Chairperson, I think this is very important. We want this as of yesterday, that they must be concluded, that those projects. And then the second one, Chairperson, is on the very same budget constraints on the implementation of their targets, the priorities on the fighting of corruption. We just want to know how is it going to affect that area in the present action plan, and other measures on capacitating AMA courts. And then the last one will be on the, would like the department to provide us with the details plans, timelines and deadlines to comply with their plan on 50% target on females at the level of senior management, Chairperson. And the last one is the previously the department they informed the committee about their programs on mentoring and training. If they can comment on that one also. That is the last one, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Jaba. Honorable SJ.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. We will respond to the question. I think the main question is revolving around the budget cuts and its implications. I will make the highlight the high-level comments on that, and I will give the members to my team to respond on that. One of the issues that is raised is on the budget cut is how it affects the judges, since the JSP has just recently appointed or made recommendations to the president for the appointment of judges, and how this cut will impact that. Maybe to start with that one, before we go to the administrative implications on the staff. As members would know, the judges are paid from the direct charge from the national revenue. And therefore, the challenge that we have is that, or rather from our side as the OCJ, for as long as the judge is appointed on a permanent basis and he's in service, unfortunately, the true fact you must face is that that judge will have to be paid, and National Treasury will have to make ensure that that money is made available, unfortunately. For the National Treasury, from our side, it's the less of a burden because that comes from there. But I think earlier in the meeting, the minister did allude to the issues relating to the budget with regards to acting judges and the processes and mechanisms that is engaged with the judges or the judiciary on that in that front, which I will not necessarily repeat or get into. But when it comes to the administrative staff with regards to the budget implications, the 71, 74, and 102 numbers are more cumulative because they are related to the MTEF, and the head of HR and the CFO will add to that. But these are the positions that affected with the vacancies, which because of the budget cuts, we were not able to fill all of them. And therefore, meaning that we will not be able to fill a residue of 71 in the current year and the following year, just like that is a number predict. So these are vacancies. So meaning that the only way the department will have to deal with this, with the shortfalls, will be to ensure that we share the work amongst ourselves, because I don't see any other way that we will be able to fill the position, unlike the position of a judge. If the judge is there, obviously the National Revenue will have to take care of that. I will ask the, whilst we are still on the issue of the budget with regards to staffing, both on the judge and the administrative staff, ask the head of HR or the CFO just to add on that one before we go to the other questions.
Thank you. Honorable Chair, I just want to then respond to the question on how does the budget cut impact the staffing of Mpumalanga. The Mpumalanga division will still continue to function as we've already appointed personnel in that division. But what the budget cut technically means that we now have to fund those appointments out of our current budget that we didn't plan for, because Treasury gave us additional money and has now taken it away again. So it means that technically, if our budget was not cut, we could have had a reduction on the 72 posts that we need to sacrifice. So for instance, if Mpumalanga currently has 60 staff members, our reduction would only have been around 12 posts that we would have lost. But because of this fact now, we are losing 72 positions. And it's cumulative. I think it was Honorable Swart who asked the question. I can't remember. But in any case, it's cumulative. So it will grow to 74 positions in the second year, and then it will grow to 112 positions in the third year. That is then the impact on staffing. So what it technically means is that we are not able to fill these critical positions with the resulting scaling down of the ability to do the administration and provide the services in the courts and the circuit courts as well. On the other question on the impact of the budget cuts, the budget cuts as they are currently will not impact on the rollout of the Court Online project for the current financial year, because we've already planned for this in the planning of the long-term rollout. But when we address the questions around Court Online, Mr. Nubi will expand on the numbers and the priorities on which courts are planned for. That actually then addresses all the... Can I go to the modernization as well?
Yes.
Right. Then there was a question on how the budget cuts will impact modernization, and I also link it then to the question on the ICT flagship projects that were also mentioned. The court modernization projects that we are planning to embark on mainly focuses on the areas of replacing aging infrastructure with modern and up-to-date infrastructure. And when I say infrastructure, it refers to items like servers, networks, network switches, end-user equipment, which are laptops and desktops. So that is the one portion. So our infrastructure is old and we need to replace that to sustain what we have. But if we then look at modernization, that then focuses on additional infrastructure needs that the OCJ has. So for instance, if we want to roll out Court Online to all the superior courts in the country, it means that our server capacity must increase. Our end user capacity, laptops and desktops, must increase to higher spec and more modern desktops and laptops. Our networks have to be increased to carry the load of the Court Online system. So if litigants file their papers from wherever they are in their offices, we need bandwidth, we need storage capacity, we need cloud capacity, which costs money, which we then do not have. The other impact would be on our disaster recovery site. The OCJ needs a data and production recovery site for ICT, which we've planned for with the assistance of IJS to establish moving forward, so whatever we have in production on the one site can be duplicated and stored for recovery during a IT crash or anything, that we can then just switch over to the recovery sites, which we do not have, and we do not have the funding based on the budget cuts. The other impact would be we plan to increase our bandwidth in each and every court for the internet services, which is needed for court modernization. So what it technically means that currently courts run on 20 megs capacity and we need to increase it to 100 megs per second, which we then cannot do. So those are the modernization issues that will be impacted by this budget cut. One project that is critical that we need to establish is the digitization of court records. Honorable members, the court records are all the court documents that are currently in the registry offices in the courts. Now, because of the numbers that are growing year on year, obviously one runs out of storage capacity, and we are planning to embark on a process to digitize all the court records and then dispose of the older ones so that we have that in an electronic format and in the cloud. Now, this is one of the projects that is now at serious risk when we talk modernization that might not happen moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. We will deal with the question relating to court online as well as the sign language and the related questions. So I'll ask the Chief Director responsible for court administration to respond to those. He will also touch on the virtual court and the issues that were raised by the members.
Thank you, SG. Good afternoon once more to the chairperson and honorable members. I'll start with the issues of raised by members on Court Online. Court Online, which was formerly known as the e-filing solution, is likely to be piloted now in the next couple of months. We are at a very advanced stage as I speak now in terms of preparation for the pilot, which will happen again in Gauteng with Pretoria and Johannesburg. I just want to indicate that the court online solution or the e-filing, just to make it easy for the members, is currently focused only on civil matters, only at the Superior Court. And most of the superior courts, as it happens, are found or built in the metropolitan areas. Though they might be in the provinces, that they might be considered as rural, but the courts themselves are in the metropolitan areas, Polokwane, Kimberley, Mafikeng, and so on. So we currently don't have superior courts that are in the deep rural areas. The only time where a court would sit in a rural area is if it's a circuit court, which then would happen at the magistrate court or a district court or regional court. But currently, the court online would only be at the superior court. I must also indicate that though the CFO has indicated the impact would be minimal for this financial year, but the judiciary had intended that phase one would be focused on the civil matters once it has been rolled out through all the courts successfully. Phase two will be then on criminal matters. So as it stands now, it looks like that we might not therefore get to the criminal matters in terms of the budget cuts, but that is for later years. Now, the court online project is led by the judiciary. There is a committee that is chaired by one of the judge presidents, which advises the heads of court and the chief justice. So the priority of which court or where firstly it is going to be piloted and to which court the court online will be rolled out, that decision is made by the heads of court after receiving guidance from the JAID committee that is chaired by one of the judge presidents. That committee, of course, is supported by OCJ officials, and we do the work and we advise them in terms of the state of readiness. The state of readiness would be whether that particular court, as the CFO has highlighted, does it have, for instance, Wi-Fi? Does it have the proper infrastructure in terms of bandwidth and speed? Do they have user equipment that is compatible with the court online? So once we have established that in terms of state of readiness, we then advise JAID. They then make the decision in terms of which court should go next. But as things stand, it looks very likely that after Gauteng High Court, it will be then the two apex, which is the Constitutional Court and the SCA, and others will then follow thereafter. Of course, in preparation for the court online, the JAID committee established a subcommittee, which is also chaired by one of the judges, which looks into the amendment of the rules, uniform rules. They have done so. They've prepared a draft. The draft for the e-filing rules was submitted to the rules board. That has also been received, and it has now been circulated, I think, for comment until the end of May. They're supposed to submit by end of May the comments on the e-rules. So that is very much on track, in line with the piloting in the next couple of months. I will then go to the issue of the sign language. We do not have at the OCJ, at least at the High Court, officials that are appointed permanently as sign language interpreters. What we do is that we outsource this particular resource. We have a database that we share with the Department of Justice that we visit whenever we need a sign language interpreter. We then go out to get quotations from service providers that have the necessary people who have the skills to do this work, and we then outsource it from them. But currently we don't have. As I have said, we share a database and with the Department of Justice, that's how we source them. And the reason being that at this point in time, though if we look at having a permanent person, the usage thereof is quite minimal in terms of having somebody permanent as opposed to getting a person whenever we need them. The issue of the virtual courts, I think I've touched on the issue of the rural areas to say our courts are there, but the virtual courts currently, just to indicate, they are more easy to use when you deal with civil matters. In a criminal matter, for instance, or in a trial matter of any kind, be it civil or criminal, it becomes very difficult to have a currently on Teams or any other platform to conduct a full trial there. So most of the trials, in fact, almost all trials are being conducted in person at the courts, but where is the motion application, where basically all the work is done on paper, then those are conducted or virtually. But as I said, I can't address, or we can't address the issues relating to Beaufort West, which was, I think it's at it falls at the Department of Justice as it is at the district or regional court. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. I will deal with some of the questions. I'll ask the CAE to deal with the issues of the anti-corruption and how it is affected by the budget, but it still links to what the CFO has indicated. And after that, I will deal with the other questions.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. Ordinarily, like with all the government departments, the OCJ adopted a four-dimensional strategy to fight fraud and corruption. We implement certain preventative measures, detective measures. We instigate investigation, and finally, there is resolutions that must take place. So when your goods and services budget, you know, travel is affected, it will ordinarily affect, you know, any awareness that you have to do, which are more on the preventative part. Your investigators that must go gather evidence and so on. However, we have also become innovative. And maybe it's also, you know, the blessings, the lack of what COVID exposed us to, that some of the preventative strategies, we started to start to do things visual now.
However, on your investigation part, hardcore investigation, you know, people that are hell-bent on doing fraud and corruption get sophisticated by day. You have to also tap on specialized services, which are increasingly becoming expensive. When you have to do mirror imaging, mirror images for just one computer for one act, you know, fingerprint experts where they are required and so on. So it's also a balancing act that we will have to navigate through with the little resources that are there. On the part of maybe the court, the load that will come with an economy that is faced with many of these criminal cases taking place and loading the court, it's just obvious that the backlogs will increase. You know, there will be delays in disposition of some of the cases. Thank you, Ajit.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. I will ask Mr. Mube to deal with the matter relating to COVID-19. I think the question was asked around the impact of the COVID, and we do have the statistics as well as the information relating to the cases and what is life and what are recoveries and where the percentage of us working from home and the comorbidity areas. I think in high level you can just quickly indicate what the situation is with that.
Thank you, Chair. First and foremost, I think the courts have, maybe should I say the OCJ as a whole, we have not been seriously affected in terms of the infections. The total number so far of confirmed positive cases since the beginning of the lockdown in March last year is standing at 233. So these are the people who, officials and judges who have been infected, but most of them have recovered. We have about 4 deaths only since then. We, at this point in time, we are operating, we've implemented what you call a rotational system where some officials will come in on such a number of days and others will work from home. Though generally it tends to be, because most of the officials, in terms of the work that we do, we are unable to work from home. For instance, if you are an interpreter, it's impossible to work from home. At the general office, it's impossible. So we are keeping our numbers in terms of rotational basis very minimal. And we, for instance, in one of the courts, it is 90%, in others it's 70. But on average, in terms of people who report for duty on a daily basis, is about 60%. I must hasten to mention that the issue of rotational basis is done after consulting with the head of court. So the head of court, in terms of the judge president, will be informed to say, we think this is what we should implement. They will then agree or disagree with that, or at least advise how that process should be implemented so that it doesn't affect service delivery. But generally, that is what we are doing. In terms of the courts that have been closed, it hasn't happened. I think it happened around March, or when was the total lockdown. But since then, courts have been operating, and most of them since then actually have never been shut down. In instances where there's been a positive case, it has happened in one or two courts where the courts were closed, but they were never closed for more than 2 days, and there wasn't much impact in terms of service delivery.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. With regard to the case backlogs, the question was, has there been a reduction of case backlogs? I think in the last meeting of the Heads of Court and the Portfolio Committee,
the Chief Justice submitted to the committee the report relating to the impact. So, and as you would know, this was the matter falling within the judicial functions. If the chairperson and the members requires of me to relay the request to the Chief Justice and the heads of court, I will do so, and I will leave that at that. But however, the OCJ continues to support the judges to ensure that the cases are dealt with in the manner that they should under the current constraints. With regards to the Land Court Bill, we are aware of the Land Court Bill, and obviously it is still evolving before Parliament. With regards to the location, it looks like there will not be any changes, as the court will still be located in Johannesburg. However, the court will sit anywhere in the country, which is probably along the same lines as the Land Claims Court currently does. And it looks like the intention of the Land Court Bill is to take the shape of almost the Labour and Labour Appeals Court. The court, according to the bill, will have a JP. Currently, we have an acting JP because the Act does not provide for that, and the deputy JP, which is in line with the Superior Court Act, and as many judges as may be determined, which is the same instrument that applies in all the divisions in terms of the Superior Court Act. Obviously, it means that there will be an additional fund in terms of the budget to ensure that there is an additional position of the judges as well as the JP and the DJP. The entire judicial establishment will be new, which means that it will not be on an acting basis that it happens currently, but on a permanent basis, meaning that the national revenue fund will have to provide for that. So this is the matter that Treasury, of course, will be engaged by us as soon as the bill has taken shape enough for us to be able to do the numbers in terms of the financial implication of the judicial establishment. The other aspect relates to the administrative establishment or post. But however, the bill as it stands now echoes the same sentiments as the Superior Court bill in terms of the provision of the administrative staff, which is not a new dispensation. That is how the court currently operates. And therefore, obviously, with regards to the budget cuts that the CFO has alluded to, that will be a matter that will be looked at. But the safety net is that currently the Land Claims Court does have a court manager, does have a registrar, and relevant support staff, albeit in a limited manner, that's just in Johannesburg and supports the court. To the extent that the court will sit wherever the JP will determine, obviously it also highlights additional resources that will be required, and the impact being that at the economic rate at which we are at, one does not foresee, if one becomes realistic, that they will be formed at any place of sitting new resources, meaning it will have to rely on the divisions, each division in the province, the high courts for its resourcing, for it to be able to sit akin to almost the same way that it does currently. But that has also a snowball effect, because then when the court comes and sit, unless there is additional courtrooms and staff, then it means the current court in that division will have to give way to the land court to operate, meaning that it's going to impact the progress and the work of that division. So these are the issues that we will be grappling with as soon as the bill takes its shape. Overall, it means that the court will need additional funding and capacity to be able to operate, both in terms of the judicial establishment, the staffing, as well as the infrastructure related resources. With the current COE or salary ceilings, that is another hurdle that we'll have to battle with, because the budget cuts, as soon as it hits the COE, it reduces the threshold or the ceiling. So we will also engage the committee to also ask for assistance and support to be able to bear pressure on the National Treasury to ensure that the OCJ is able to implement the land court bill appropriately. Other implications obviously are anchored around these issues that I've already indicated. One example one can highlight is that the moment you have a permanent judge, you must have a permanent secretary and the researchers and all other related resources that need to support the court effectively. So in general, that is that on the land court bill. The last question that I will deal with relates to the details on the SMS at the 50% female at SMS level. The question relates to the details in terms of plans and timelines and the progress with the mentoring and training. In the last meeting, we indicated that one of the strategies we'll use is to make sure that we train and mentor those who are within the system to prepare them for SMS readiness. So we will, with your indulgence, Chairperson, send to the committee the reports as requested, as we do not have it currently with us now. However, just to mention that we did send the information at the last meeting as requested by the committee, which also had included the breakdown at SMS level as requested by the committee. Having said so, I think we have covered all the questions, Chairperson, unless there is anything that you think we did not cover, we'll hear from you. But that is from us. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Esther. Are there any members who think that their questions have not been answered? None. I'm not sure whether you have not turned off the slides. Yes, that's good. Okay, no, the problem was on my side.
Oh, okay.
Yes, thank you very much for the presentations. I must also thank your facilitation of the meeting between ourselves and the heads of courts. From that meeting, it's clear that we need quite a number of meetings to engage with the judiciary. We have set up a meeting with the minister so that we can discuss with him the issues that the judiciary raised with us in our meeting. Because it's quite clear from the questions of members, I think there was a question raised by Honorable Swart about issues relating to e-rules. It's important that we must start imagining a new normal even post-COVID. What would be the rules that would govern our new society, our new normal. And in deciding those rules, what will be the cost-benefit analysis? So it might mean that we might even have to amend or tinker some of our legislation to facilitate the new normal and to ensure that some of the budgetary constraints are dealt with. For instance, I know that the government often does not pay or does not often get value for money. There is always a price for government which is not a reasonable price. It might not be applying to yourself, it might, but for us to be able to save on the minor resources that we have to start there. some of the pens that the state buys, instead of paying 7 rand, it pays 27 rand. So the head of the locus that the minister said we must share gets to be much, much smaller, because our procurement processes are not ensuring that we maximize on what we have. I think these are some of the issues that we need to really apply ourselves in trying to resolve, as Honorable Breitenbach has indicated. I once had a situation where we wanted to buy an official car. We saw the car. It was 751. It was a second-hand car. The rules demanded that we must advertise for 3 quotations. In the same garage, from the same garage, we got a quotation of 2.1 million, 1.5 and 1.2. Same car, same garage. But the actual value of the actual car was 751. Now, had we followed, fortunately in the handbook, it did give us a way of buying directly from the manufacturer or from the garage. So had we followed the rules, the price would have been 1.1, which will be the lowest price, but that is not the actual value. That is not the actual value. So that thing is widespread in government. So because we did not follow that, we bought the car straight from the garage, it was 751. Now, if we have 2 times that with many transactions that are happening in government, how much are we losing? And as a direct response to that loss, then we have to cut budgets. So I think it is important. I mean, I'm not referring to the Office of the Chief Justice. I'm just making a general observation that we have to think deeper. In certain instances, some of the costs are avoidable. I mean, in our case here, we have a court in Mpumalanga. I think we built 3 courts. We're supposed to build 8 courts, but double the price. And that is what is being investigated by the SIU. Instead of having 8 courts, we have 4 courts, double the price, with a lot of structural defects. Now, that money to fix that structural defect, we will have to cut budgets for service delivery. That is one area that I do think that is both as public representatives and as officials in government, we have to seriously look at it. And because if we can be able to unlock our resources there, the situation is not as bad as it is put out to be. But we are generally paying more for less. I think Honorable Breitenbach will bear me out here. Most of the judges we interviewed in the last interview of the JSC, those who had the benefit of using caseline, they found it to be extremely helpful. They found it to have really assisted them in their work, in fact, to ensure that they make judgments faster and quality judgments. But I think it would be important that we have a broader study to say if things can go the way they are going now, where for everything we need to invest on human capital. In the next 10 to 15 years, how much will it cost? Vis-a-vis, if we can invest heavily on ICT infrastructure, the cost might be higher, might seem higher now, maybe in billions, but what are the savings in the medium to long term? Because I remember when we were dealing with the issue of energy in South Africa, we were told that nuclear is very expensive, the capital outlay is very expensive, but once you have it running, then the prices decrease significantly as it runs compared to coal and others. Now we need a detailed case study to show, and if we have to maybe even borrow money and invest it in a holistic infrastructure strategy that would be implemented, what will be the capital outlay in the immediate, but what will be, we must be able to demonstrate even to National Treasury, what will be the savings in the medium to long? Because you need to arm us so that when we take up your case, we have facts. The National Treasury is under pressure to find money to fund a lot of other government programs. So when we say we must fight for the Office of the Chief Justice, for the National Prosecuting Authority for Correctional Services, we need to be armed with facts so that whatever money we demand that or we request that it must be invested in a particular program, we must be able to demonstrate what is going to be the value in the immediate, in fact, what are the costs in the immediate, because you're fighting us that we must ensure that you get more money, but what is going to be the value in the medium to long term. And we must not define a long term in terms of 5-10 years. We must define the long term in the range of 15 to 20 years. So the state must be able to say, if we go and borrow money in capital markets, this is going to be the cost in the short term, but these are the savings. The savings are not only in terms of budgets or rent and cents to you, but you must be able to demonstrate savings even in terms of the cost to the economy and to social cohesion. Because some of the cost, some of the delivery that the courts make is will not be tangible to a person who might not be close to the system, but they are tangible benefits to the economy and to the and to the and the social cohesion in the country. For instance, if I am supposed to be a witness in a case and I stay there, I stay in court for the whole day, which often happens, I'm called at 3:30. I was there for the whole day, which means I have been economically inactive for the whole day. And there is a cost to the economy, there is a cost to the country. So we must be able to get that information so that we can be able to fight the fight with you to ensure that the cuts are not severe, but at the same time, getting resources for the Office of the Chief Justice, we must be able to ensure that we don't get resources at the expense of everybody else. So let's make the system to work for everybody else. Some of the issues we are going to be raising them, the issues that pertain to judicial function, since we have this opportunity now of meeting with the judiciary, we are going to be raising them with, we're going to be raising those issues with them. But I think between ourselves and yourselves, let's have the ammunition to confront National Treasury. They will not listen to us if we just go there and complain, because they don't have money themselves. So the issue is, where are they going to get money? So we must assist them to say we can get money by doing A, B, C, and D. So let's assist one another in terms of doing a serious cost-benefit analysis.
Thank you, thank you. So who feel it, Chairperson? We take the lamentation that you are expressing to us for ammunition to be able to empower the committee to fight the battle for the budget cut. Difficult as it is, it's a mountain to climb. We agree with you. So the EXCO will look at this matter and see how we can be able to do that. It will need us to take our step back and rethink in terms of what you have just asked us to look at. It is just that from our side, the budget cuts can be very limiting. Sometimes from the official point of view, you really feel you go into this exercise and you know what the answer is from Treasury. So it is very heartening for us if the committee can also assist us in that context to fight for this battle, which of course is not only the OCJs, I think the entire government is facing the same issue, as you have correctly said. But you've also alluded to the long-term plan to ensure that these things can be looked at from a long-term investment. We will do our best to, we will do our best, Chairperson and Honourable Member. Thank you very much for the work.
Thank you very much. Now, we are prepared to enter the fight and fight on your behalf. Because there are visible gaps that can be better managed, we think. But it's for us to show those gaps and have compelling arguments. As I've said, that there are procurement gaps which other people are exploiting at the expense of government and South Africans, and we have to try and tighten those and ensure that we release resources from those gaps, because the last time I checked, government procurement is in excess of 435 billion. And then from that amount, most of it is because of that excess. So if that we can save money from there, that money can be released for service delivery. Thank you very much, Chief SJ. And to your team for the productive meeting. Thank you very much. And thank you very much, honorable members, for soldiering on since 9:30 in the morning until now. I think we must give you time to relax. We will meet again tomorrow at 5:30.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members.
Thank you very much. We will meet at 5:30 tomorrow morning to receive a report from the Public Protector of South Africa.